Hey there, and welcome to this episode of I Think I'm Gonna Lose It, a podcast about losing weight, getting healthy, and trying to have some fun in the process. I'm Dana Tofig, your host, and thanks for joining us. If this is your first time listening, here's all you need to know. I'm a 51-year-old guy who has struggled with his weight his whole adult life. I got very frustrated and pretty much was ready to give up. But earlier this year, I had gotten heavy, really heavy, the heaviest I've ever been, and I decided to give it one more shot. I'm trying to lose weight for the last time, and I'm using this podcast to share what I'm doing, how I'm doing, and what I'm learning along the way. If you want the whole story, listen to the previous six episodes, but that's the basics. If you're a return listener, thank you so much for coming back, and yes, this episode is coming out later than I had hoped. It's been a crazy few weeks. In fact, we're going to talk about the craziness and how that's impacted my efforts to get healthy. We're also going to talk about sweetness in this episode, the non-sugar kind, and we'll check in and see what the scale is saying. Thanks for joining me on this journey. Let's get started. Since I've gotten serious about trying to lose weight for the last time, I've had to give up and cut back on some things that are simply not a part of a healthy lifestyle. For instance, two of my favorite foods, pizza and bagels, are pretty much on the do not eat list, or at least on the don't eat it very often list. One thing I have reduced but not given up is sugar. For instance, I'm a coffee drinker, and I like my coffee sweet and light. I used to add so much sugar to my coffee that when I would have dinner with my family, they would count the number of teaspoons I'd put in each cup. One, two, three. It was pretty funny in an annoying way, but there's no doubt that excess sugar was a big part of my weight gain, and my love of sugar has been a big part of why I haven't been able to keep weight off when I've lost it. I don't want to call it a sugar addiction, although that may be what it is. But let's just say I've never really dealt with my sweet tooth, or my sweet mouth, or sweet leg, or sweet brain. Now this time, I really am trying to reduce sugar and figure out how to live without it. For instance, I used to have two or three 12-ounce cups of coffee in the morning, and I'd have half and half and a couple of teaspoons of sugar. Since I started this program, I make 8 ounces of coffee and put 1 teaspoon of sugar in it. It's still sweet, and it saves me a bunch of calories. I've also started using artificial or alternative sweeteners on occasion. For instance, I'll use a sugar substitute in my second cup of coffee or in my oatmeal. But I do have some questions about artificial sweeteners, and like most things, it starts with my childhood. I was a kid in the 70s when artificial sweeteners really went mainstream. The first big one was saccharin, which is most often seen in the pink packet called Sweet and Low. It's also in the Diet Cola called Tab. It was huge as people really started to watch their calories in the 70s. It seemed like everyone was drinking Tab. Now, as an aside, I thought Tab tasted gross, but I later became a heavy Diet Coke drinker. Anyway, in the 70s, a study linked saccharin to cancer in lab rats and mice. I remember all the discussion very clearly, and there was a warning put on items containing saccharin. Soon, other artificial sweeteners followed, such as aspartame and sucralose. More recently, a naturally derived sweetener, stevia, has gained popularity, and it's the one I use when I use a sugar substitute. But the truth is, I haven't really paid attention to the research on artificial sweeteners since the 1970s. All I know is to stay away from saccharin. So I did a little search, and I actually was surprised by what I found. First, and some of you may know this already, there's no warning on saccharin anymore. It turns out that multiple subsequent studies did not find a cancer link in saccharin and raised concerns about the initial research. The warning was removed in 2000, and saccharin is no longer considered a carcinogen. Who knew? Well, I didn't. Well, you know, in fact, most studies have found artificial sweeteners to be safe, and that means that they've been cleared by the Food and Drug Administration for consumption, and generally, they don't cause cancer. But fit for consumption and doesn't cause cancer are not slogans that necessarily make for great marketing. Sweet and low. We're pretty sure it won't kill you. See what I mean? Rather, the artificial and alternative sweetener industry has promoted their products as part of a healthy diet. And the products that use these sweeteners have done the same. Think about advertisements for Diet Coke or other sugar-free drinks. Unfortunately for them, the research is more shaky on whether artificial sweeteners are actually part of a healthy lifestyle. A comprehensive review of existing research on artificial and alternative sweeteners was published in 2018, and it looked at the connections between these products and weight loss, cardiovascular health, and other indicators of well-being. The bottom line? For the most part, non-sugar sweeteners didn't make much of a difference. Alternative or artificial sweeteners didn't reduce obesity and didn't lead to healthier outcomes in other areas either. Some experts did say that the drinks and foods that use artificial sweeteners may help people avoid or manage some health conditions, like diabetes, but only as a part of a strategy to get to the healthier alternatives, such as water and low-sugar foods. The authors of the review and others agreed that the evidence on non-sugar sweeteners was pretty thin and more rigorous research was needed. But that doesn't mean there isn't any evidence. About 6 or 7 months before this review came out, the results of new studies were published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Experimental Biology. An article about the study in Science Daily said the results suggest artificial sweeteners change how the body processes fat and gets its energy. In addition, they found that certain byproducts of the sweeteners can accumulate in the blood and have a more harmful effect on the cells that line our blood vessels. Now, it's important to note that these studies were conducted on rats and cell cultures, so there are limitations, but it's certainly something worth paying attention to. The lead researcher in that study, Brian Hoffman, said something in the article that I thought was both prescient and obvious. Despite the addition of all these non-caloric artificial sweeteners to our everyday diets, there has still been a drastic rise in obesity and diabetes. Touché, Dr. Hoffman. It's a great point. But why is that? Well, a blog from the Harvard Medical School offers a couple of reasons why this may be the case. They spoke with Dr. David Ludwig, an obesity and weight loss specialist at Boston Children's Hospital, and he offered some clues as to why artificial and alternative sweeteners may actually undermine our weight loss and our health goals. First of all, people may think that since they're saving calories with a diet soda or drink, they can indulge in other areas. I mean, seriously, how many times have you or someone you know been at a restaurant and said, "I'll have a bacon cheeseburger and French fries and a Diet Coke"? Now, some people will argue that they like the taste of diet soda better than regular soda, and that's why they order it. There's a reason for that. Artificial and alternative sweeteners are hundreds of times sweeter than regular sugars. Dr. Ludwig said this intense sweetness can throw off our sugar receptors and change the way we taste food. So foods that have less intense sweetness, like fruits and vegetables, can become less attractive to us. In fact, he also said our bodies may stop associating sweetness with calories and cause us to crave sweet foods even more than we already do. So, in an effort to cut calories, we may actually be training our body to shun the healthy foods we should be eating and crave the sweet foods that we shouldn't be eating. That's crazy. The takeaways for me are this. First, there's not a lot of evidence that artificial or alternative sweeteners are bad or good for you. In fact, there isn't a lot of evidence at all about the effects of sugar substitutes on the human body. As use of artificial sweeteners has grown, obesity has become an epidemic. I'm a prime example of this. I used to drink a lot of Diet Coke and eat fat-free or sugar-free products, and my weight has only increased. So I may keep using stevia on my oatmeal, but if I'm going to sweeten my coffee, I'll stick with a little sugar, or I'll try somehow to figure out how to drink coffee without sugar. Or maybe I'll just have a glass of water and an apple. I know, it's boring, but it's probably the smart choice. It's time for a check-in on how it's going in my journey to lose weight and get healthy. So as I mentioned at the beginning, this episode is at least a week late, actually a little bit more. The past few weeks have been crazy. It's been really busy at work. We celebrated my oldest son's 16th birthday. We celebrated Mother's Day. I've been leading the worship band at my church, and my other band is preparing for a really big show we have on May 25th. Add that to the everyday time suckers like getting kids to their practices and activities, doing housework, and, you know, sleeping, and the podcast has had to take a back seat. But that's all good stuff. It's life, and it's part of what so many people deal with as they try to lose weight and get healthy. Look, it's easy to stick to a diet when every day is the same, but that's not the way life works. I'm lucky because the first several weeks of my program, life was a little bit calm. I didn't have a lot of travel and I didn't have a lot going on. I could really focus on controlling what I was eating. But that's just not the way my life really is. For instance, as part of my job, I had the opportunity to attend the Education Writers Association conference in Baltimore. You know, look, it was a chance to learn, network, and see a lot of people who work in and around the same area that I do. All of the meals were included in the price of registration, which is great. But for someone who's trying to manage what they eat, it makes it much harder to control your food choices. Conferences are deadly for diets. Now, for the most part, there were healthier choices at the conference, but it meant foregoing the sauce and gravy-covered foods and opting for salads, vegetables, fruits, and scrambled eggs. And like many conferences, there were cocktail receptions and plenty of time at the bar. And since we were in Baltimore, a friend of mine and I took in a baseball game at Camden Yards, one of the Major League's best ballparks. Now, food-wise, I did pretty well at the conference, although I did have a really good brat and a couple of beers at the ballgame, and there was a night at the bar. But for the most part, I held it together. And look, it was worth it. It was a great conference. I learned a lot, and I met a lot of great people. But combine that with the birthday cakes, lots of eating out, and the general craziness of life, it seemed like there was temptation at every corner. Here's an example. After I got back from the conference, I went into the office where I work. And we have a kitchen at work that every once in a while, someone will put leftover food on one of the tables. Sometimes it's like Girl Scout cookies, or there's sandwiches that didn't get eaten at a meeting. Last week, I walked into the kitchen to make my oatmeal at 9:30 in the morning, and there was half a birthday cake and a box of Malamars on the table. It was 9:30 in the morning. Birthday cake and Malamars. What the hell? Anyway, all of this is to say that this hasn't been the best few weeks of dieting, but there have been some highlights. One is I went clothes shopping the other day, and it wasn't the completely soul-crushing experience that it normally is. In fact, I've lost about 6 inches on my waist already, and I was able to find some jeans that fit. Another highlight is that the scale continues to move in the right direction. Now, as a reminder, I was 262 pounds on March 1st, and I started this program a few days later. As of Monday, May 20th, I'm 229.2 pounds. So I've lost 33 pounds in about 2.5 months, and I'm under 230 pounds for the first time in a long time. So I'm losing about 1 to 2 pounds a week right now, which is slower than my earlier pace, but it's still pretty good. Now, to be honest, my efforts to exercise more and drink more water haven't been as successful, but there's plenty of time for that. In fact, I'm hoping our next episode will be all about exercising. Until then, I'm just going to enjoy these victories and keep moving forward. Okay, that's all for this episode. Before I go, if you're looking for a little more inspiration and information, here's two things you can check out. First, a proud uncle moment. My niece, Gabby Tofig, was interviewed on the Heart Rate podcast, which is hosted by the Road and Trail Runners Club out of New York City. They interviewed Gabby about what inspired her to become a runner and how she approaches her training. Now, fair warning to all you sloths out there, Gabby is a monster runner. She just did a half marathon in an hour and 23 minutes. That's an average of 6 minutes and 20 seconds per mile. But she also knows about commitment, hard work, and overcoming challenges. I'll put the link to the podcast in the show notes, and it's also available on Apple Podcasts. Give it a listen. Also, check out the most recent episode of Real People, a talk show on Fox 61 in Connecticut, hosted by my good friend Stan the S-Man Simpson. Stan interviews Mike Harrington, who not too long ago weighed over 400 pounds. He's lost more than 200 pounds since then and has made it his mission to help others get healthy. It's a great interview, and Harrington is really honest. Go to fox61.com and search Stan Simpson to watch the episode online. And finally, my normal warning, I'm doing this podcast to chronicle my journey and share what I'm learning, but I'm not a doctor, a personal trainer, a nutritionist, or even an Asgardian. If you're going to make changes to your eating or exercising habits, don't take advice from a guy who has been obese for much of his life. Consult a professional. Hey, thanks for listening, and thanks so much for going on this journey with me. Look for the next episode on or around June 7th. Until then, shoot us an email at loseitpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @loseitpodcast. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to I Think I'm Gonna Lose It.